Hello, everyone. You're listening to the 805 Uncensored Podcast, a podcast hosted by two leftists on Chumash land. It's a podcast that covers music, spirituality, philosophy, and more. As always, I'm your host, Jordan. And we also have Heather Schmidt, our co-host. Tonight, we're going to be covering all things related to food, climate change, and yeah, a bunch of topics. So, first things first, let's just go ahead and start with, why do we think that people were not prepared with the food emergency after COVID?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, I think that this is a bigger issue of like American education and things that have been cut from American education.
Yeah.
You know, like I was in high school in the 90s, and that's when we started seeing a lot of cuts to like humanities and the arts and, you know, world history and things like that. And I think a lot of people just didn't, like a lot of people just don't know. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think your point is perfect, right? American exceptionalism. I think that so many people in this country thought that the pandemic would never personally touch them, but actually, you know what? Rewind. It goes even beyond that, because I remember there were so many people that thought like, oh, this isn't even going to come to the US. Like this, you know, this is a virus that's going to stay over in Asia.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny that like every time I hear American exceptionalism now, I think about this interview that happened, I think it was in 2021 with Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it had to do with like COVID or any climate or anything like that. But for some reason, American exceptionalism came up. And Ted Cruz flipped it, right? Because we know that American exceptionalism is, you know, the belief that we're special and unique and it's not going to come here, or we're not going to have the same problems that other people do. And we see that regionally too, like, especially with COVID, we saw that here in Ventura County. Like Ventura County thought that even though COVID was already raging in LA, that it would not come here.
Mm-hmm.
But Ted Cruz in this interview, I cannot forget it. He was like, somebody like the interviewer said, you know, American exceptionalism, you know, like in the pejorative, which it is.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz said, you know, I'm sorry that you don't think Americans are exceptional, but I do. And I'm proud of our American exceptionalism. And when he said that, I was like, oh my God, like there are a shit ton of people that actually think it's like a good thing.
No, you know? Of course.
Even though it's a criticism. I mean, it is a criticism.
Yeah, a very stark one at that.
Yeah.
And also like there's a bunch of people that would completely like resonate with them, right? Like they'd be like, oh fuck yeah, we're exceptional. Just like completely missing the point.
Which I mean, and then I get back to like education, because like we are now teaching kids and teenagers and young adults to ignore all of the evidence that they see in front of their faces.
Wait, like, Heather, can you say that again? You kind of broke up in the beginning.
I was saying that this gets back to education.
Uh-huh.
Because we are teaching people, kids, teenagers, even young adults, to ignore what they see right in front of their faces. Yep. Right? To ignore like evidence and data world history. When we look at like, you know, the topic of food and food shortages and COVID, anybody that has ever read even like a summary on the Black Plague knows that worldwide famine came after it. Anybody that like ever took you know, ancient Greek philosophy or philosophy 101 class knows that, you know, the early Greeks, or the people that were there before the Greeks, the Mycenaeans, they were wiped out by a famine that followed disease. Like, everybody knows that over and over and over again, when you have, a pandemic or a serious disease that wipes people out, it breaks your supply chain, and you have breakdowns in things like food. And so it's just stunning to me that people just for some reason expected that it wasn't going to be that way this time. Like, it's like repeating history. Why do we continue to think that it's going to change?
Well, and I think it just kind of goes back to like another point that I've made in a previous episode, which is just like, we've just normalized mass death in this country so much. And COVID was really the tip of the iceberg in regards to that.
And normalized the burden of things being passed on to us. Like, even beyond like food shortages, like medication shortages, the burden is passed on onto to us, and we normalize it, right? Like the American struggle, it's crazy to me.
And also like there's like a lesser, right? So if you're not able to shake the virus, or if you're not able to recover economically because of how the virus has impacted you and your family, you're somehow considered less, or you deserved it, or whatever. And that just ties directly into fascism. Labeling an outside group, and then there's a direct connection, obviously, because so many people have suffered from long COVID, which has caused them to become permanently disabled. What are we even gonna do in our economy, Heather?
I'm not sure. I and you know, and it's funny because when I was looking over the outline for this, and like our next topic being like climate change's impact on food, before climate change, between like COVID's ongoing impact on food, which COVID is still causing breakdowns in the supply chain. And unexpected closures, and that leads to economic hardship and all of that. But between that and climate change, we have like our economy, and this is so timely because of the House of Representatives situation now, and the annual budget. I mean, we could have a major food crisis in 42 days here in this country. 7 million women and children will be kicked off of WIC, and people that think that that they can be on recess for a week and then elect a speaker and then get all their appropriations bills passed to fund the government in time, they're crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what about the student loan repayments? There's millions of Americans that are going to have to decide between buying food and paying back their student loans.
And it's funny because this is like when you like look at government and like their responsibility, you talk about like externalities, right? Like the consequences that are passed down to us for like commercial activity. So like with the student loans, I would argue that student loans and the predatory lending practices and the way the interest rates are allowed to, or interest is allowed to rack up, and they're allowed to sell the loans to other lenders, like the whole system, like that is creating a negative externality that is then impacting people's ability, as you just said, to put food on the table, right? Just like COVID is impacting, I mean, that, and at this point it is commercial activity because it's private companies that are choosing not to take precautions, private insurance companies that are choosing not to cover. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people's insurances are not covering the vaccine now. And so that's like a private organization, commercial activity that is impacting people down the line, right? Because if you have somebody that's like vulnerable and wants to get a flu shot and a COVID shot, they're going to pay for that before they pay for food.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a matter of life and death, literally.
It's like how you see seniors buying cat food, right? About 50% of the time, seniors that are buying cat food are buying it for themselves because they can't afford regular food because of their cost of prescriptions. And that is commercial activity that the government is refusing to interfere on, or intervene on is probably the more appropriate word.
Yeah, and like I really I don't know what we do, because even in instances where Biden steps in and does something that's commemorable, we would give him kudos for it. The fucking Supreme Court will go in and shut it down. This group of unelected people that has, complete control and authority over our lives, that will be in power for the foreseeable future. It's just crushing. It's devastating.
Yeah, I think that this cost of living crisis is probably like the tipping point in my view. Because the Supreme Court, as you just said, is not going to let up. It's not.
No, if anything, they're getting more and more emboldened.
Well, they see Citizens United as a precedent. So as I see it, that's it. That's it. And unless somebody has the balls to step up and do something about it, but nobody does. Joe Biden literally spent millions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, to have a commission look at the Supreme Court and make a recommendation. Expand the court, make reforms, what?
Expand the
And
court.
they all they did, all they fucking did was produce a 300-page summary of the history of the Supreme Court and their decisions.
Oh my
And
God.
they took no position on it, and the whole thing just went away. And so it's like you don't have anybody willing to do anything about it. And when we're talking about food, I mean, that segues into the issue of climate change, because the Supreme Court is going to propagate climate change, in my view. Especially after that decision about the wetlands. And so
Yeah, let's start talking about climate change's impact on food. The first subtopic was droughts, fires, and flooding. Yeah, so Greece, for our listeners that don't know, has been hit now twice with biblical levels of flooding from two different storms in the same areas over the course of just a few weeks. And prior to the flooding from the storms, they had a ton of wildfires. And Greece has all kinds of extremely fertile farmland for olives and a number of things that people depend on around the world. This is devastating, Heather. This is happening all over the world over and over again. New York City, I saw that JFK Airport just received over 8 inches of rain in less than 24 hours.
And that's, I think what shocks me is like there was a lot of uncertainty about how like climate change would play out, or I think it was really abstract for a lot of people. Like they thought it would just slowly get warmer and warmer. And I don't think people realized, the same with COVID, which as we know is a part of climate change, like how it would be so like blunt and leave you in a position to basically do nothing, right? I think that when we're really gonna see like people like waking up about like connecting the dots is when you have something really major happen in the Midwest.
Oh, like affecting the food supply. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I think we're gonna see people start to get it, because I think a lot of people don't honestly like know like where their food comes from, right? Like I think I want to look up the data on that because I think a lot of people don't like connect, like they don't realize that, you know, their most of their like fruit is coming from Mexico and most of their seed oils are coming from Greece and most of their grains, I mean, like are coming from Ukraine. We also need to talk about the issue of the war in Ukraine and its impact on the grains, the world grain supply. Let me look that up a second though.
Yeah, and then in the southern United States, the salinization of soil.
Yeah.
You know, salt water's going into the soil that's impacting agricultural land. And then with sea level rise, there's areas like Bangladesh that are already uninhabitable.
Yeah. So roughly half of Americans have no idea where their food comes from.
50%.
And this is
I'm surprised it's not higher.
this is from Alliance for Science. And exacerbating that is that fewer than 2% of Americans live on or near farms.
Yeah. And what, 100 years ago, that was probably 70% of Americans.
Yeah. And I think that the other thing about that is like they don't just know like where your food comes from, but then they don't have like any concept of food waste and recycling and the issues that come from food waste. I mean, food waste is another huge issue, right?
Yeah, or just like a general like detachment from nature, right?
I mean, it's a total detachment from the issues. And again, this gets back like, what do we do?
Well,
What do we do to get people to wake up?
it seems like we're seriously like evolving towards like a Brave New World society where like people think that we can just kind of like out tech everything.
Which is.
Terrifying. I don't know if I sent you this YouTube video that I came across a few weeks back, but they were basically making the case that South Korea has become a cyberpunk dystopia because of the hyper influence that Samsung has over the population, and how early on the youth in South Korea are programmed in their brains to basically like dedicate every single second of their lives towards like making them the cream of the crop in order to get recruited by Samsung, because they control 30% of South Korea's economy.
That's crazy
So it's like
and dystopian.
yeah, it's extremely dystopian. It's like in our country, people wanting to work for Google, but it's like but you know tenfold. It's on steroids. Yeah, it's incredibly dystopian. But let's get back to climate change and food. Let's talk about impact of hurricanes and the intensity in the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, what did you want to say about that?
That is a supply chain issue again.
Yeah, right?
And then you have to start like asking like, you know, is the issue that people don't understand like logistics? Like, do we need to be going into schools and teaching kids about supply chain, right? Because then they would understand, it would be easier for them to connect the dots. Like, okay, so if all of your workers at this chicken plant get sick and the chicken plant shuts down, you have no chicken. Or if you have a hurricane that is in greater intensity, that's moving extra slowly because of the heat dome or the heat pressure, and the change in the barometric pressure and the jet streams, that stops you from being able to ship cargo through the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, and that's exactly why climate change is a national security threat. Matter of fact, I think it's the number one national security threat around the world.
Yeah, I mean I agree completely.
So why do you think that people are predicting that we'll now continue to have food disruptions and scarcity forever?
Yeah. Well, so we've had a guest on the show before, Zach, Preston Ruse, and yeah. then some other commenters that have talked about how COVID was like the shift, right? It was like it wasn't just like where we got too far gone, but where you got a shift in paradigm in like the government and just society in general.
Yeah.
Where the government no longer really feels or is I don't want to say feels, because that, you know, anthropomorphizes the government as a whole. People in government, policymakers, they no longer feel like they have an obligation to intervene on these things. And that COVID kind of kickstarted it, and I guess manufactured the consent for that. And so there's been a total paradigm shift, and a lot of people we've been talking about for like decades in like academia that there needed to be like a paradigm shift, right?
Yeah.
But not this one.
Yeah.
this was not the paradigm shift that people have been advocating for. This was in the wrong direction. And getting back to your point about the Supreme Court, Citizens United and our current Supreme Court really paved the way for that. They basically codify into law this paradigm of the government is not going to intervene anymore on the net outcomes of these actions, because corporations are people too, right?
Yeah, and it comes down to literally every single like instance where government is supposed to be involved, right? Like, it doesn't matter what it is. I guess the most prominent example that would pertain to what we're talking about right now would be natural disasters. Like, how many examples do we see over the last couple of decades of high-ranking officials in the U.S. government responding to disasters with such fucking lackadaisical, apathetic attitudes? And people living in those areas just being used to it.
Yeah.
You know, just being used to nobody giving a fuck about them.
Yeah. Yep. Or what about the increased privatization of water?
Yeah.
Like, especially on like the local level. I was just talking to somebody at school about this today, about water. And I mean, I'm at a very conservative university, and so I watch my words.
Right.
But I could not help myself today, and I just said, "Look, I think it's crazy that we pay for water."
Fuck yeah.
Fucking crazy. And then all of a sudden, people started agreeing with me, because look at where we are in Ventura County. Like in Camarillo, as an example, they privatized water, and now they're also privatizing the capital improvements of the waterways. So they're passing the buck onto the people. Well, you have a water bill that's $200-$300 a month, and you can't keep that up. Well, guess what? You're homeless soon. And then you don't even have access to fresh running water. And it's just like a domino effect, right?
Well, do you remember a number of years ago when the Nestle CEO said water is not a human right?
Mm-hmm. And that's coming from the people. We want to talk about food and Nestle. That is coming from the people who notoriously have gone into remote areas in Africa.
Yes.
During population booms. Okay, when you have a lot of mothers that gave birth in a short period of time and given them just enough samples of formula for their milk to dry. That is who That is who Nestle is.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah.
I think I've talked about this a long time ago on the podcast, but I knew that at the height of the California drought, in the early 2010s, like 2013, 2014, they were caught in Big Bear Lake, San Bernardino National Forest, pumping water out of the lake and the reservoirs around it. At the height of the drought, using expired water permits from the 80s.
And Arrowhead was just doing that too.
I mean, Arrowhead's Nestle.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God. They were just caught doing it again.
Pretty sure they are Nestle. I'm
Yeah,
gonna look
they were
that
just
up.
caught doing it again. A federal judge just ordered them to stop pumping water, and supposedly they're gonna try to take it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, Arrowhead bought Nestle in 87. That's what I thought.
Wow. But I mean, like on the issue of water,
Was bought
like
by Nestle, I should say.
that is, I mean, that is a fundamental thing to survive. And you have to pay for it.
Isn't it crazy, right? Like, you and I are kind of like political nerds, obviously. So we've taken the political compass test, and one of the questions is, like, what do you think about the commodification of water? Or like, what do you think about like water being sold in a plastic bottle? I think is the question. And it's like, it's fucking crazy. It honestly is. Like, I've had conversations with my grandma, and she remembers still before we had plastic water bottles. And all the like the demonization though that later came with commercials about how like you just absolutely cannot trust tap water. You need to drink out of bottles because it's purified. And all this just fucking propaganda.
And then look at like the US, the United States, and I only know this off the top of my head because again, I was literally just talking to somebody about this today. But the United States sends $13 billion worth of humanitarian aid to third world other countries per year, and a substantial portion of that is fresh water.
Oh my gosh.
And that's
Oh.
when I was having this conversation today, I was like, maybe, I mean, I don't know, like when you have like a homelessness crisis as severe as the US has, and you have literally homeless people like going to the bathroom on the side of the road because they have no access to fresh water or bathrooms or anything, like I don't know, maybe we need some humanity.
So, have you heard about these Saudi companies that are
No.
buying water from the Colorado River area?
No.
Yeah. And then shipping it 7,000 miles back to Saudi Arabia to grow alfalfa, which is a highly water-intensive plant. And if you know anything about the history of Saudi Arabia, the reason that they're not able to grow shit out there, besides being a fucking desert, is because they have sucked all the groundwater out, overwatering things that don't belong there. And so literally they're buying water from the US from a drought-stricken area where there's already millions of people that depend on it, so that they can grow a crop that got them to where they are in the first place.
Well, and this is what we're talking about with the tipping point, right? You've reached a point where these practices are no longer sustainable, and yet they're pushing to do it anyway. And we're allowing it to happen.
Right. And then Saudi Aramco, right, is one of the number one contributors of climate change.
Yeah. And they knew,
Yeah.
right? They fucking knew, just like ExxonMobil. Like ExxonMobil fucking had modeling back in the 1970s. That was 50 years ago. That was before I was born. Okay. That was fucking half a century ago. And they had modeling that showed where we were going. They had better modeling than some of the best scientists had. And they fucking did it anyway.
Buried the evidence.
But back to my point, I think that COVID and the paradigm shift that occurred like at that like in that moment, it shifted the paradigm, and I well, I mean, I think it's a number of issues. There's a vacuum of leadership, and the corporations are just too big now.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is too much for people to solve. And people that don't want to solve it because look at our government. Our government is all, I mean, I'm sorry, this is ageist. They're all knocking on death's door. I mean, come on. You have a
Yeah.
United States senator who fucking voted and then died in her sleep that night. What incentive does that person have to solve anything?
Right, seriously.
And that's I think the problem.
Yeah, it's a huge one for sure. And I actually want to get back to that point when we talk about solutions, because I have something else to add to that. But I wanted to talk about how forests around the world actually are transitioning to carbon sources rather than sinks. And that's one of those major tipping points for climate change that scientists have been talking about. That's a extremely dangerous feedback loop.
Yeah. Well, I saw someone today posting that somebody was planting trees, and I immediately thought of that you had sent me, and I was like, wait a minute. Do you plant trees? Do you not plant, like, what do we do now?
Yeah, so no, we're right. It's a good question. Like, we're planting actually trees around the world at record pace. And I think that we should continue to plant trees. But yeah, the way that we're going right now, and this isn't something that's going to happen, in 100 years. This is something that scientists are talking about happening in 15 to 25 years. This
Yeah.
is something that will probably happen by 2050, where car where for forests are releasing more carbon than they're taking in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't believe in all like the woo-woo shit, but you have to start wondering like if this is the earth like trying to correct itself, right?
Yeah.
Remember when COVID like first started and there like everybody was at home and there were like dolphins swimming through the canals in Italy and like
Totally, totally.
and then everybody just went back to normal. Like if I was like a sentient planet, right? I would be so fucking pissed that I would just be like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like
For real.
that's what it is. And I'm not saying like that's like what's actually happening.
But like seriously, no, like it took like a week or two. At like 2 weeks at most for Earth to completely recover. Here, I want to share something from this study though, unless you had another point you wanted to make.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So yeah, what I was saying about trees becoming carbon sources rather than sinks, there's a study that came out from the Woodwell Climate Research Center that found while trees at different latitudes have different temperature thresholds for many forest types that are important for absorbing CO2, photosynthesis peaks at 18 degrees Celsius, which is 64 degrees Fahrenheit. But there's data that shows that there's no limits on the amount of CO2 that they can release. So plants typically absorb CO2 and release oxygen, but they also exhale CO2, particularly at night when photosynthesis ceases due to a lack of sunlight. But forests also emit more CO2 when they're stressed by increasing temperatures. So that's pretty alarming. So they're saying that because of that, This will turn vegetated landscapes from carbon sinks into carbon sources within 20 to 30 years, accelerating climate change. He wrote, for my money, the results are conservative because in the study, they didn't even factor in forest die-offs.
Wow. And you know, that makes me think of the fish, because as the planet is warming, the bacteria levels in fish are changing and rising, and people are getting more foodborne illness from eating fish, including that necrotizing bacteria that causes people to have their limbs amputated.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the same shit. That's the same exact shit. The earth is warming too much.
There was a co-author of the study from New Zealand that studies soil at the molecular level. And he wrote that the time that ecosystems have bought us, when we should have been doing something about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we've wasted it. Because, you know, it goes back to your point that you made earlier in the podcast about wetlands. Wetlands are a perfect ecological barrier for things like storm surge in the Gulf Coast. In Oxnard, they're being absolutely decimated. They're not nearly what they were a couple of decades ago.
Oxnard, you know, we've talked about how Oxnard is expected to be underwater by 2050. I don't even think it's going to take that long.
Parts of it, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take that long. Anytime you go to the beach in Ventura, you can see that the water has risen. Due to erosion. And they did that dredging after the last storms, and it didn't fucking help at all.
So I've got this Facebook page called like Southern California Memories, and I saw a photo come up the other day where somebody was talking about Malibu, and they took a photo at Zuma, or one of Malibu's more famous beaches, doesn't matter. Somebody commented, and they're like, where's the beach? And then people were like, oh, the ocean has just gotten that much bigger.
Wow.
Like over the last like 10 years since she had been there.
And then people respond and say, oh, I thought there was a drought. It's like, the whole conversation down. It's like, no, it's not this simplistic.
Their sea level rise because it rained.
Yeah.
The fuck does that mean?
I know.
Also, another thing about the study that was really striking to me that I wanted to share about Southeast Asia and the Amazon is it says 50% of the terrestrial biosphere reaching temperatures above the threshold that limits photosynthesis by the mid-century. I'll read that again. We're expecting 50% of the terrestrial biosphere to reach temperatures above the threshold of photosynthesis.
Growing food breaks down. And what makes me so nervous about that is like and I'm sure when we get to the end, when we talk about solutions, we'll talk about people growing their own food, right? Yeah. But if photosynthesis is breaking down because of temperatures, you can't grow your own food.
No, there's, yeah, and there's
no one is spared.
Yeah, and the most agriculturally productive places on the planet are becoming places that are no longer agriculturally productive. So by that, I'm talking Amazon, I'm talking Southeast Asia, I'm talking Russia, I'm talking the boreal forests of Canada. Those are going to be some of the first places on this planet that will reach that climate tipping point.
Yeah. And again, getting back to like the point of American exceptionalism, I think people still don't believe it. Like they still think, well, it won't affect us. Oh, you're talking about Russia. You're talking about the Amazon. That's not here. Which speaks to like a bigger issue. Again, getting back to education, which is that I think that a lot of people still fail to grasp the idea that like we are all connected. Like
everything like, is.
We are connected to the earth. The earth is connected to the trees. The trees are connected to the fish, connected to the water. And when one thing starts to fail, everything will. That's why there was that study that showed that 25% of the earth's biodiversity is going to be gone by 2100. People still fail to understand that that could include us.
I read there was a study that came out today. 41% of amphibians around the world are facing extinction right now.
I've seen what is going on with the worms. I've seen a bunch of videos about worms and insects, something about insects. There's a reduction of worms and insects also, which also will have an impact because worms fertilize the soil. Worms create soil.
Exactly.
And again, this gets back to, the temperature of the planet, which it seems to be spiraling out of control.
No, it seriously is. I mean, the fucking saguaro cactuses, or cacti, I should say, the saguaro cacti in Arizona are melting. It's
Yeah.
too hot for cacti.
Did I send you the photo from my friend in Arizona? He had one on his property and it died.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. It fucking died. He posted a photo of it and was like, "So long, old friend." And I was like, "Oh my fucking God."
Holy shit.
Not good.
What the fuck is going on over in England?
I don't know. What is going on in
It's
England?
getting pretty fascist. Did you
Yeah.
see the comments that were made by the Prime Minister? That's why when I was texting you, I'm like, this is giving 2015, 2016 leading up to Brexit. And I put a comment in our outline about the treatment of the Syrian Civil War refugees because I see a direct parallel. I wrote about this topic when I was in college, and I think this is going to continue to happen with climate change. There's going to be I alluded to this in the last in the panel, but there's going to be a number of countries around the world that just are too hot for people to live anymore. And a number of those countries happen to border Europe.
And again, like you get back to, I think that what's happening with a rise, well, I mean, it's probably a very complicated, but there's a rise of fascism all over the world, right? And I think it's because
And just really authoritarianism.
and I think that it's probably for numerous reasons, but one is that it getting back to COVID being the flip of the switch. Okay. I think that the way that the public responded was terrified most of people in world leadership, because it became evident that there are a lot of people and not a lot of them. And the way to control during a time of chaos or crisis or whatever is to become more authoritarian, right? This is why we see Joe Biden giving COVID money to the cops. This is why we see this cop city shit going on. This is why we see Gavin Newsom sending a whole fleet of CalGuard to the border between Mexico and the United States. This is why we see cops everywhere. I mean, if you drive around anywhere in Ventura County now, there's fucking cops all over the place. I have never seen more cops out and about than I have in the last several months. And people are like, "Oh, well, it's because there's more retail theft." Bullshit.
No, for real.
Bullshit.
I see it too. There's so many more cops around.
But I think I think that this like rise in authoritarianism and hard line, tough on crime, tough fascist shit is because it's going to be increasingly difficult to control people when they are faced with their imminent extinction.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. However, authoritarian and fascistic governments arise when you have populations that enable the rise of those things.
Yeah,
And
true.
so I see comments all the time from people that are just fucking cheering on the rapid funding of police. They're
Yeah.
absolutely going crazy in favor of Cop City. They think that's wonderful for our country.
Yeah.
And like so I think it's really important for us as leftists to like take a second to kind of just like get out of our bubble and
Yeah.
like really like wrap our head around the fact that like there's a lot of fucking people that like are at the opposite end of the spectrum that
Yeah.
are completely enabling the fascism and authoritarianism that we're seeing increasingly around the world. And yeah, it's what the fuck? Where do we go?
Well, I think it not just people on the opposite end of the spectrum. I think there are a lot more people like in the middle
Yeah.
than we realize. I was just telling you today that like Bernie Sanders had people that were protesting at his peacefully holding signs. He had them arrested, which is crazy to me.
Good
But
point.
I think
Why?
there's more people in the middle than we realize, or there is a vacuum of leadership, and there's a point of like just fear of the masses, in my view. I really believe that we have a lot of people that just are in positions of power because they bought their way there, but they have absolutely no leadership qualities at all. And so they'll go whichever way they're pushed.
Yeah, and
Like,
I
and
think, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, to your point is, to further to the right.
Yeah, and I think one of our solutions that we could talk about too is like how we could work as a country to kind of like systematically destroy these legacy systems that exist within our government.
Yeah.
Because I think that's like that leads to nepotism, that leads to apathy, that leads to people getting very cushiony jobs with a
Yeah.
revolving door,
Yeah.
etc. It's we've got to eradicate that and work towards that. But before we t talk about solutions, was there anything else? Oh yeah, let's talk about pet food and adoptions because I think that's important.
Yeah. Well, I think it and I and it and it I think it's gonna probably be seen in different ways with people too,
Yeah.
as this food scarcity and crisis gets worse. But yeah, pet food is 20% higher today than it was when Joe Biden took office. Just like overall inflation is 24% higher. I think food inflation is 16 or 18% higher.
Yeah.
Again, I think what we're seeing with pet food is that you are having this like I don't want to say trickle down. I hate the term trickle down, but you're having a domino effect,
I think it depends on
which
the
is that
context.
yeah. But people are surrendering their pets more to shelters. Shelters are then having to do these like free adoption events, waiving adoption fees.
Yeah.
Vets are ending up having to increase their cost of care because of the cost of their equipment and pet supplies and pet treatments, pet medications, shit like that.
Right.
And that's impacting them also. Start euthanizing animals, and I think that's just all because of uncontrolled cost of pet food, which a lot of pet food is grains, which come from Ukraine.
Right.
So, and that just shows you how public policy has effects everywhere, right? And climate change, public policy, war.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into talking about Ukraine, about how the war in Ukraine has created much of the inflation that we are seeing today. And I I cannot believe how many times I have agreed with like MAGA Republicans, like Marjorie Taylor
Wait,
Greene.
wait, wait. You're saying that all the money that we've printed for Ukraine is impacting the economy and it wasn't the stimulus checks?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, like all of a sudden are spitting truth more often than I am comfortable with. And
Yeah.
it's like Jesus fucking Christ, how out of control have things gotten if those people are the ones that make sense?
Well, I actually have an explanation for you. And you may not agree with me, but in my experience, they're like with foreign policy, right? Like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, I would say that their philosophy is more like libertarian right. And so one of the only areas of political discussion where people on the left that are like non-interventionists, people that are not in favor of regime change wars, etc., will agree with people like that is in the area of foreign policy.
I also think that I also think that things are, with the cost of living and the economy are becoming so bad that it's almost becoming impossible for people to disagree on some of these core issues because it's impacting everybody. Like, it's very difficult for people to actually disagree unless your like head is super far up Joe Biden's ass. And you have an incredible privilege that you need to protect. And I say that like you don't want people to know that you're struggling because of your social circles. Everyone agrees that economy is absolute dog shit right now. Everybody agrees that average Americans are having a hard time putting food on the table. Everyone knows that as a political candidate, it is virtually impossible to raise money right now. It is so fucking hard because nobody has it. Even traditional donors. Adam Schiff is only raising an average of $32 a donation. Think about that.
Wow.
Joe Biden is only getting $48 average donation. That is
Now,
big trouble.
do you think that's because just people are broke or because they don't care or both?
Probably both.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's both, but to the point, like things are getting so bad for people in some of these areas that you're eventually going to meet a point of agreement, you know? And I think that on this issue, like with the cost of live, like the cost of food, the cost of living,
Yeah.
I think that it's easy to agree with people like even Ron, like DeSantis and like all the Republicans on that. I don't know if you watched the Republican debate last week or the week before at the Reagan
No.
Library, but when they talked about the inflation, what they were saying was not untrue.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the Democrats
Well, that's
can
why
do this
Bernie,
gaslighting.
well, I think that's why Bernie really hit home with so many Americans, besides his honesty and his charisma and all that, is because he has the intelligence and the politics to counteract the populist right. So many Democrats, like just, run-of-the-mill mainstream corporate Democrats, they have no clue how to battle the populist right. And that right there is also a major factor for why we are starting to turn into a fascist country.
Qualification.
Yeah, qualification, lack of
You're just
pushback.
talking,
Like, what do
all
you
you're
like?
talking about is a lack of qualification.
Yeah, like seriously though, like what the fuck do you have to offer? Like voters have to know that you have something to give them.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And even in our local elections, we're seeing that people equate now at this point, back to this paradigm shift, people equate having the money to buy your way in personally
Yeah.
as your the only qualification that matters. And if you go in with actual qualifications, you are against whomever has the most money. That's a bigger issue altogether,
Yeah.
but it's happening at every level. And that's what's so dangerous about it, because like when we have a crisis relative to the climate, or relative to food supply, which is tied in, who's going to be solving it for us?
Right.
You think the fucking food banks are going to be able to solve it? I mean, people seem to think that they'll be able to go to a food bank and, get a full meal for every three times a day for every day of the week. I think I've told you this. I used to pick up a food box for one of my friends who lives in East Ventura, and we actually had to stop because she's diabetic. She has type 2 diabetes, and the quality of food that they gave was from Foodshare was so low that she was like, I have to throw this out or I will go into keto, whatever it's called, the when your blood sugar gets super high. And so we had to stop picking up food from Foodshare for her, because every time it was like bread, rice, pasta. People donated, like, they had gotten like Lucky Charm bars and donated that macaroni and cheese, just junk food. And so it's like, do you seriously think if we start having widespread food shortages, or if inflation picks up again, which food inflation is starting to pick up again, and with the cost of gas, food inflation is going to pick up again because it costs more to move the food. Do you seriously think that everybody just thinks that they can go pick up a box and that will be sufficient? Hell no. You cannot live off of expired bread and Lucky Charms.
No, and we'll probably have to do an entire other episode on this, but that reminds me of just like, the reality is if we're gonna have any sort of a stable society, we cannot rely on private donations and charities. This is why we need mutual aid. This is why we need community organizing.
Well, the in public administration, we have the PPNP, the public private nonprofit relationship. And the whole idea behind it is that the public sector fills is it meets the needs of people, intervenes, when commercial activity harms people, meets the needs of people that can't help themselves. And they rely on the private sector and the nonprofit sector to fill some gaps in the interim, right? What's happened is we have all these people that are elected to office that somehow interpreted that as forever. Nonprofits can just fill the gaps forever, or the private sector is actually who we work for. That's the other thing that's crazy about it is people in elected office that think that the public private non profit relationship is actually about serving the private sector. What the I mean, that's crazy, and it like you said, we need systems of mutual aid. We need a universal basic income. I just saw today that the CEO, I made a TikTok about it, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, Jeremy Dimon or
Jamie
Diamond,
Dimon.
whatever his name is, Jamie Dimon. He said that in the next generation, we will see the work week reduced to 3.5 days. All these people are in like the comments celebrating, super excited, great, 3.5 days. Yes, we need to work less. Yes. But there was nothing said about an increase in pay. So jobs are going to get more productive, and people have been warning about this, like HR people, public managers have been warning about this. AI and robotics are going to make jobs more creative. You're going to have people only working 3.5 hours a week or 3.5 days a week. That's going to be a full-time job, but making the same amount of money. Who you think is going to pay for food?
Well, not only that. Yeah, not only that. I think jobs are going to get a lot harder too. Right? So I think there's going to be a lot of people that are underqualified for positions.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And they're going to be expected by management to take on more and more for less pay.
Yeah. So like my question, and I didn't like put it in our notes or anything, but my question is like, when you have like people in positions of power, Joe Biden, Congress, the U.S. Senate, state Senate, you know, Gavin Newsom, even our county elected officials.
Yeah.
They know what's going on. Like they know that there is increasing food scarcity.
Right.
They know they have access to even more data and projections relative to all these issues than we have.
Yeah.
So what's their plan?
I mean, like, I hate like, to sound...
What is Joe Biden's plan when people start starving in the streets?
It seriously seems like it seems like it is militarization of the police for everything.
Well, and that gets back to our the conversations we've had about what the police actually exist for.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is to protect property.
And
so if you have a scarcity of resources, you have a small group of people that you want to serve them to, of course you have to have more police to protect those resources from everybody else, right?
Yeah. In my How to Fight Against Fascism book by Trotsky, he writes about a society becomes fascist. It doesn't declare that it's fascist. It becomes fascist when the normal police evolve into the secret police and into militarized police. And that's what we're seeing, you know?
Well, yeah.
For a long time now, but it's just getting more and more dramatic. I think I lost you for a sec. Are you there?
And my house is like on the corner of the street, of a pretty major street, and I pull in, and my parking spot is right there. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like parking my car, and a cop pulls in behind me. He doesn't have lights on. Right. And I'm like, okay, well, he can wait while I fucking park my car. He's just coming in to, you know, drive around and harass kids or whatever. He doesn't have his lights on. So I don't think it's an emergency. He got pissed off and like sped off around me because he was in a hurry. And then like three more cop cars come in, no lights. When you're talking about secret police.
Yeah.
Like the normalization of cops coming in without lights on. And I always hear bullshit about, oh, that's for their protection. My ass, it's for their protection. They're in a fucking armored vehicle. Okay? Their vehicle is armored. I don't want to hear that that's for their protection. That is the secret police.
Also, like, we could have even a psychological conversation about that argument, right? Like, maybe, yeah. maybe, just maybe, we wouldn't have so many people that are violent or dangerous if we didn't consider that everyone is violent and dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Or like people that equate shoplifting to a violent criminal.
Right.
Think about that. Think about somebody that says, oh, this father of four was stealing chicken at Vaughn's. He's a violent criminal. Lock him up. What the fuck?
And that's exactly... No, that's so true, Heather. And that's exactly why Desmond's point in a previous episode about how there's so many people in this country that have never touched the incarceration system view
yeah.
criminals, people that get incarcerated, as their others, you know? As their lesser
yeah.
human beings.
Yeah. Well, and that's like... That's getting into like the radical otherness of anyone that isn't like us, right?
Yeah, and that's fascism.
Which we do in the extreme here in the U.S. My daughter actually was reading something for her philosophy class, and she said that someone in like their discussion or whatever online said that a lot of philosophers today think that we have like reached that point of otherness and nihilism that Nietzsche feared, right? Where everybody is the other and everybody is the enemy, and there's really not much to hope for. I just my pressing question is, all of these blue MAGA Democrats especially, who are screaming on the internet and screaming in person that everything is great, I just want to know what their plan is when you seriously do start seeing people starving in the streets. Or Congress now playing this fucking game with the speakership and the budget, when you have 7 million women and children starving, what are you going to do? Because we're seeing people in the streets now more than ever with the homelessness, and they appear to be doing nothing. I don't see any of them having a substantive plan besides back to your point about cops, criminalizing it. What do you think about Joe Biden's plan, or not Joe Biden, Gavin Newsom's plan with Care Court?
Enlighten me.
So Newsom has a plan to fund Care Court, where you basically identify whether or not people that are homeless are mentally ill, and then force them. It's forced institutionalization.
Oh my gosh.
And so he has a bill, I think, in the state legislature that they're trying to work out the logistics of to fund and to deal with Care Court. In the meantime, they are giving all kinds of grants. You know, they're doing those home keys, you know, the conversion of hotels. But also they're giving cities grants to just clean up homeless encampments. So like Oxnard is an example, just got $4 million. They're going to clean up two camps here in Oxnard. That's just criminalizing homelessness.
Yeah. And then, you know, people just applaud it. People are like, yeah, this is great. Because homeless people are an other. It's an eyesore.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, there's always that statement, like, don't give the homeless people, they'll just use it on drugs and alcohol. A study was recently completed that found that what they actually used it for, when you give a homeless person money, is the obvious: shelter, food, water.
Yeah. Shocker.
Those are the things that you need. And as it becomes more scarce, we see the impacts of it. But I just want to know, what is the plan?
Well, I mean, to answer your question, I think you're seriously, like, I hate to say this, but I think once it gets to the point where people are in the streets because they're starving to death, you're going to have to take two sides. You're going to either be with the people or you're going to be with the cops. Mm-hmm. That are cracking down on the people that are in the streets.
I hate to say it, but I really actually think that we've passed that point and they've chosen the cops.
I think you're right. I absolutely think that you're right.
And that's controversial for me to say, you know, but it's pretty evident.
No, but I feel like you've always, like, I've always felt that there's varying degrees within the Democratic Party, within the realm of ideology.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, I think, a particular type of ideological Democrat. Like, we're talking about neoliberals, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are the people that are going to side with the cops every single day, no question about it.
And I think as you see things become more unstable, and you see the calculus of politics become more and more just who has the money.
Yeah.
You see more and more people that are on the left or that say they're on the left moving into that, like, corporate neoliberal, blue MAGA, you know, Democrat who's still, like Joe Biden, all of his fundraisers are at billionaire homes, right? You see them moving there because that's the only path that they see to success.
Yep. And so, the whole thing's just so pretentious.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, I don't know how the elections next year are going to go, but I think that a lot of Americans are very, very resentful of the "you just don't understand" attitude. Yeah.
We are so tired of the condescension.
Yeah. And that's especially true, getting back to our topic, when you're talking about what people can and cannot afford. Like, telling people they just don't understand why it's hard for them to feed their kids now, more now than it was 2-3 years ago. Like, telling them that is, people are so resentful of that.
I mean, how could you not be? You're being told that by somebody that's making 6 figures, that has their health care completely taken care of, their retirement, their family set for life. How could you not be resentful?
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing more and more people that are just done. Sometimes I wonder if it's intentional. Like, we can only win if we have low voter turnout. So let's make people so apathetic that they don't even vote. But I think that they're not that smart. You know,
I don't think it's that either.
Yeah, I think that
they're incompetent.
Yeah, they're incompetent and out of touch.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Which is unfortunate. So what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, they seriously just look at DC as an ATM.
Yeah.
But what can we do with climate change? So I would say right off the bat, land back. I think that we need to put a lot more political say in the hands of indigenous people for managing land practices.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anything about world history, they were experts at managing the land. Something that I was reading about very recently, if you're familiar with Aldo Leopold, he talked about ecological restoration of ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And so this ties into indigenous land practices too. So this is taken from the Society for Ecological Restoration, International Science and Policy Working Group. So it says that the potential for the restoration of an ecosystem rests on 3 assumptions. The first one is abiotic factors must have remained unaltered, or if not, can at least be returned to their original state. Number 2 is viable populations of the species inhibiting the ecosystem must still exist. And 3rd, the ecosystem must not have been upset by the introduction of one or more foreign species that cannot be eliminated, and that may preclude the survival of reintroduced native species. If these conditions are met, revival efforts have the potential to restore the ecosystem to some semblance of its former state. And then, you know, Heather, that also kind of takes me to another point, which is how I think that we could use ecological restoration as a means of fighting colonialism and imperialism. Because if we're talking about like the Maui wildfires, for example, that was a direct result of imperialism and colonialism because of the overgrowth from what was left over at the sugarcane plantations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a solution that could be applied across a wide swath of this country. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And also, when you mentioned wildfires, which devastate our crops and are a result of climate change, that's another thing where policymakers, I think, really, I mean, I know that they're starting to here in California, but I think we need to go much further to adopt indigenous fire practices. I mean, the indigenous communities have a longstanding tradition of controlled burn strategies that they have used to cultivate what you're talking about, cultivate the land to do ecological restoration, but also to prevent unanticipated harm. And I think that there is nothing to lose by returning to original ways, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that that's what we saw, like in the earliest days of COVID, when people were at home,
Yeah.
and when you didn't have millions of cars on the road, all of a sudden the dolphins could come back, and the air cleared, and it happened very fast. So I think that listening to the earth and the people that have always been most in tune with the earth, is the appropriate course of action. The problem is that there's money to be lost in doing
Right,
that, right?
right.
And so it's going to be a fight.
So, yeah, I mean, speaking of the word fight, everything in this country since its founding and before its founding has been a fight. And the book that I'm reading right now is called The Big Burn, which is about the biggest forest fire in US history. And if the robber barons and the people that had complete control over all industry in this country during the Gilded Age would have had their way, Yosemite would be a fucking Walmart right now. There were people, there's not nearly enough people who understand that there are people that literally gave their lives so that we can have things like national parks.
And I mean, I don't know if it will come to that, but or who's up for the challenge today, right? To actually fight for it.
Right.
Because the only people that are really, I mean, I do think that it is escalating when you're seeing people like destroying works of art to draw attention. I think that's kind of stupid, but you're seeing the behavior become more volatile. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like environmental sabotage.
But yeah, and actually, speaking of fighting, we didn't even get to the issue of war.
Is that are you gonna have a solution in there though?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
Because I think that I think there are a lot of people that believe that will be the solution.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, supposedly we're sending troops into Haiti for something. And I my dad and Nick were talking about how like it's a humanitarian thing because the gangs are out of control and blah blah blah. And I was like, let's look up what Haiti has. Haiti has a lot of fresh water, and Haiti has food. They have a lot of crops. And so it's getting to that. And I guess Kamala Harris made a comment about how we haven't even got to the water wars yet, and people were like, excuse me. So
Oh, yeah.
I do think,
I actually agree with her on that point.
yeah, but I think that there are people that believe that will be an answer, but I don't think that is going to be the solution. For obvious reasons.
No, and I'm not even probably, actually, I know for a fact, I'm not thinking about wars over water in the sense that she is. I'm thinking about very like small scale, rural areas of the Middle East and Southeast Asia, or places like the Sahel, sub-Saharan Africa, places that are just have huge populations of people that are no longer going to be agriculturally productive and sustainable for populations.
Well, yeah, and I think that there are people that assume that based on kind of like the way that the world has worked for the last, forever, that that's all it will take, right? Is to go in and take, oh, we don't have water, okay, we'll go somewhere and take it.
Yeah, and that's been, yeah, always the just Western imperialist mentality.
Yeah, but I think returning to original practices, leaning on indigenous cultures. I mean, this is probably another whole episode altogether, but I also think there is something to be said for just accepting that some of this is beyond like our scope. And so we need to look at like our own practices and our own communities and like what we can do and who we can influence in our own community. Because maybe possibly that could be enough to, you know, move the needle a little bit on a grand scale, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Or what about just like, you know, connecting various ideas? Like, we have all kinds of compounding crises in this country and around the world. Two of them, most notably, are mental health and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, like, we develop sophisticated methods of community organizing within individual localities where we could go into, like, green spaces and we could articulate different ideas about what's going on in our community and devise solutions to those problems.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people respond to that and say like, oh, well, that's not gonna fix climate change, that you're talking about the whole entire globe. Well, I mean, I think it might be time to accept that we can't fix climate change and we need to focus on what we can fix or what we can control or what we can do while this happens. And so, yeah, doubling down on localism.
And it's prevention of isolationism, because I think it's a mirage, right? I think the interconnectedness and the ability to just reach billions of people at the click of a second, it's a mirage, because really a lot of us are alone.
Yeah.
Most people don't have too many friends. Most people don't have advanced social circles. So if we were able to develop some sort of way where people could get together in green spaces, in natural areas, like parks, like city forests, et cetera, and they could just talk about things, I think that would really go a long ways. Yeah.
Or even stuff, I totally agree with you, but even something like the establishment of more community gardens.
Yes.
You know? Okay, so in 15, 20 years, we might not be able to grow much food, or it will be more difficult to grow food. But you know what? Right now we can.
Yeah.
So let's start a community garden, or let's, you know, share seed with our neighbors, or let's every neighbor pick a plant and everybody grow it and then we share. I think that you know, finding, you know, most Americans don't really the way that the media portrays it is that they don't care about climate change. I actually disagree with that assessment. I think that people feel hopeless about it. They feel like it's too big for them. It's too big for them to deal with it. So they're just going to enjoy their days while they're here, whether it's 5 days or 50 days or, you know, 50 years.
I really
think that if we just focus more on localism, like you're talking about, like start organizing for people to come together to talk about solutions that work for our community, because like we have a lot of water here right now. We're not having the same issues that they have in the Sahara, right? So for us to even be talking about how to solve their problems are everybody's problems is a little crazy because they're different, right?
Exactly. It is. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
And that's why I appreciate like the state of California is now starting to look to indigenous tribes in California to deal with burning areas. And I appreciate that because that is localism. I mean, it's a statewide localism, but it is localism. It's addressing the issue that we have here rather than continuing to argue about what to do on the grander scale, because, you know, some of that is a little bit out of our control at this point. I do think on the issue of control that a lot of people thought we had control because it seemed like we had a long time, and now it's clear that we don't. And so just doubling down on our own communities, to me, seems to make the most sense.
Me too.
You know, and continuing to fight against this fascist shit.
Yeah, and to do so, you have to allow more women in there. You have to you have to allow more people of color. You have to allow young people. Going back to your point earlier on the podcast, just about just how many older, out of touch people we have in government. That is a huge barrier in progress.
Yeah. Because they have no, even when they have grandkids, like they have no incentive to change. And I think about like the abortion issue with that. You have like Democrats, right? Like really wealthy Democrats in the Congress and the Senate that just let abortion go away, right?
Yeah.
And you know, they scream about women's rights, but ultimately they don't give a fuck. You know why? Because
it was always it was just always an election tool.
Yeah, but if they're like, you're like, oh, but you have grandchildren, you have granddaughters. Yeah. If they needed an abortion, they would have the money to take them to somewhere to get it.
Fuck yeah, exactly. Abortion has never been banned in this country. It's been banned for poor people.
Yes, exactly. And so even on issues that they seem like they should care about or they do care about, I think that they're insulated in so much privilege. That's the thing about the U.S. Congress and the speaker being ousted yesterday and the debt or the spending budget is now not going to get done on time. I think there are so many like Democrats, people on the left, and then MAGA Republicans that are just sitting around gloating about this because they're insulated in privilege. Because they're not going to starve because of it.
So yeah, I think that they think about themselves personally, right? And I think that they also seriously, like going back to the American exceptionalism, I think that they think that their money and their material conditions of their family will supersede anything that comes from the climate crisis or any other foreseen crisis. So I think that they just think that their means are above it.
Yeah.
You know, anything else you want to add or think you want to wrap up? No, that was a great episode. As always, be sure to catch the 805 Uncensored on all of our social media channels. We're on Instagram at 805 Uncensored Pod, TikTok at the same name. I've been trying to do better about putting videos up on YouTube, so if you want to check out our YouTube channel, that'd be awesome. If you have any questions, comments, guest ideas, suggestions, shoot us an email, 805uncensored@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great night, morning, evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Stay safe out there. Bye.